Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Phil Blancato, and I am CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management, a division of Advisor Group. Today is April 22nd, a beautiful sunny day here in New York City, a bit cold, waiting for spring to come. It's being a little difficult this year. We can't seem to break that 50-degree barrier, but it is beautiful and sunny outside. I work in New York, and one of the unintended consequences, I guess is the right way to put it, of driving to New York City every day would normally would take me an hour and a half, only takes me about a half an hour. Hard to believe that one of the things I thought I'd never see in my lifetime is I've been doing it for a few weeks, and sure enough, it's quite easy to get here, regrettably. I actually wish it wouldn't be. Well, welcome to another update economically as to what's going on, how we see the overall economy, the impact that the virus is having, and key indicators that we're watching to try and manage the overall economic slowdown. More importantly, have an understanding of where we go from here. Well, certainly the virus has had a profound impact. It seems to be all we talk about. When we look back, the worst of the stock market being down 34% back in March, and today, looking all the way to today, stock market only being down about 12% as of today, it's hard to believe how shockingly volatile the market has become. When you think about the stock market at times like this, there's three ways to look at it. That it comes in phases. The phase one would be the shock and awe of the stock market. When the first news broke about the virus, the market sold off wildly, not knowing where to end. And then you get into that sort of second phase where the market trades sideways. Down yesterday, up today, down the next day, based on headlines. What headline is going to come out today? Today was about potentially another cutback in oil, maybe some concerns about the Gulf and what might happen there. And then more importantly, some new news around the virus slowing down or bending the curve, something that set the market higher today. So when you look at all of it together, phase one we're out of. Phase two we're squarely in this volatile market. And then phase three, when we get there, will be where we finally find the bottom and begin to grind higher. But in context of all this, let's start with remembering, just to go back a little bit, that the stock market in and of itself is always predicated on the economy. The economy is really predicated on all of us, the consumer. Now, sadly enough, from an economic standpoint, tomorrow another 3 to 5 million people are going to hit the unemployment line. We're probably going to get through something to the tune of 25 million people may eventually hit the unemployment line. It's a terrible situation, no doubt about it. We have watched the number of people applying for jobs or losing their jobs escalate. But the bulk of those jobs are in industries that are related to leisure, tourism, travel, and so on, the areas where we, the consumers, spend a lot of our time. Well, because of a forced lockdown and this idea of being forced to stay home, forced to shutter our businesses, an event-driven recession, it really has an interesting take when you think about where were we economically going in. Well, to the truth be told, we were in pretty good shape. The U.S. consumer has an 8% savings rate, meaning that today, for every dollar you make, you're saving 8 cents. That's the highest we've seen in a long time. There are very low levels of debt, low levels of credit card debt, low levels of auto and housing debt. So the ability to spend is there. We had average wage growth of over 3%, the lowest unemployment of our lifetime. Corporate health was in good shape. You think about where corporations were. We had a lackluster year of earnings growth, corporate earnings in 2019, and actually had started to pick up quite well. Put those two together, and the body of the economy going in was pretty strong. So when we think about this event, what type of event was this? Well, what type of recession is this? Well, squarely, this is an event-driven recession. And when we look at that, we think about normal recessions are because we have some sort of a bubble. Like in 2008, we had the financial bubble, or we have runaway interest rates, or runaway inflation, or an economy that's growing too quickly. That wasn't the situation here. This is a particular type of recession that was forced on us. And when you look back over history, these tend to be the shallowest of recessions and the ones where the stock market bounces back the quickest. And, in fact, that's exactly what's happened. This bounce back in the stock market is not unlike other events like this in history. Some degree expected. So that's a good sign. However, just like the economy going into this, it's fair to evaluate the stock market going into this. The stock market going into this was not inexpensive. And in fact, when you look at the average price of stocks in the month of February, they had gotten quite expensive. After 2019, of a year without earnings growth, but the stock market was up 31%, 2020 had begun to look a lot like 2019. So the volatility of the stock market was partially caused because of the economic shutdown, and partially caused because stocks were not inexpensive. The bond market also made a bunch of money in 2019, up nearly 8%, and now even today stands up 4%. And you're not earning any of that really through income. It's very little income right now. 10-year U.S. Treasury as of today is paying you 0.6%, so just a little bit over half of 1%, to hold government bonds for 10 years. That is basically 1.5% below the rate of inflation. So think of that. You give the government your money, they give you back less than 1%, and actually you lose money every day compared to inflation. The bond market was not inexpensive either. Lots of people are buying bonds, which is driving the prices higher as a place to hide out, but not a place to earn a lot of money. So when you think about the economy, while it was healthy, the stock market was expensive, and so was the bond market. So when you mix all this together, put the virus on top of it, it's a very unusual event. That because it's event-driven, it means that we would expect a bounce back, and we certainly have had one. But where do we go from here? Well, first off, when you think about the current state of the economy, whether it's the unemployment market, which is really horrific, or the GDP, the gross domestic product of the United States, how much we earn, we got accustomed to earning around 2-2.5% on an annual basis for the last few years. We actually had 1 year of over 3. This year, the annual growth of the United States is going to contract. It's probably going to contract to the tune of a -8%. The first quarter alone will contract something to the tune of a -5-8%. The second quarter, the quarter we're in right now, is going to contract as much as 25-35%. Think of it this way. If you ran a business and that business generated $1 in annual revenue, you're only going to generate 70 cents if you annualize it. For this particular quarter, that's how we're looking, that a significant drawdown in revenue. So not only 22 to 25 million people on the unemployment line as of tomorrow, not only a significant drawdown in total revenue that we're generating, not only are we looking at earnings of corporations contracting by as much as 26%, or 1/4 of total earnings for the second quarter will be decimated. It really is a very difficult time to try and analyze it. Put on top of that oil, and suddenly oil demand, which was going to be cut by as much as 10 to 25 million barrels a day, you've got multiple factors telling us the U.S. economy is shut down. And oddly enough, here we stand, and the stock market is actually not down all that much from the year. Well, why? Well, it goes to where I opened. The reason why the market has done much better, both equities and fixed income, is because there are two unknowns we need to know. First, how quickly is the virus spreading? Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Well, the virus as of late, the latest information is very promising. And I'll start with New York City just for a moment. When you look at New York City, where I work every day, you realize that the number of cases has really come down significantly. Just yesterday, there were only 600 new cases in the entire New York City. Well, back on April 6th, there were 6,194. What a significant difference. The number of people going to a hospital just yesterday was only 26, whereas back on April the 6th, again, it was 1,627. The number of people passing away yesterday was unfortunately 9, but back on April the 6th, again, that number was over 521, and on the 7th was actually 543. We've seen a significant drawdown in the number of people being impacted by the virus. When we look at the United States in general, certainly there's even an improvement on a total U.S. standard and a total global standard. On a global basis, to start there for a second, actually, if you compare this week to last week, there were 157,000 new cases last week globally. This week, there's only 100,000 new cases, accounting for the first 3 days of last week and the first 3 days of this week. So that's a real improvement. We're looking at cross-the-board improvement, which is very exciting. And in the United States, when you look at the number of new cases, our worst day for daily new cases was back all the way on April the 3rd with 34,000 just that day. And yesterday, we're down to 25,000. That's still a lot of people, but certainly a significant drawdown. Nearly a fourth of the number of new cases has come down. So our fatality rate is still pretty high. We actually peaked on April the 15th with 2,600 people passing away that day. Unfortunately, God may God rest their souls. We did have a bad day yesterday with 2,804, But besides yesterday, every day since the 15th has been lower. In fact, the best day we've had in quite some time was April 19th at 1,500 people. So you're seeing improvements significantly in the United States, but the real success is when you look over in Europe, which we're basically a week behind Europe, and you think about what's going on overseas today, whether it's Spain, Italy, France, Germany, and so on, we're watching other countries really radically improve. And I'll talk about Italy just for a moment where I have some family, and that when you look at Italy, the number of new cases peaked way back on March the 21st, and as of yesterday, and they peaked that day at in Italy at 6,500 cases. For yesterday, it was only 2,256. And the number of fatalities peaked back on March 27th. For yesterday, it was basically 454. That's a lot of numbers. Basically, what I'm trying to tell you is that the curve is bending. And in fact, it's bent in almost every developed country in the world. And on current projection, the number of active cases are going to go down significantly in the next 5 to 7 days. In fact, the United States is going to fall down to 5,000 active cases by this time next week. But interestingly, Italy, again, for an example, will go to a negative 3,000 by this time next week, meaning the number of active cases will go down so much that, believe it or not, the total number of cases will contract by 3,000. That's a radical improvement, and it's like that everywhere in the world, which is exactly why we are seeing this improvement in the overall market. That's why the market has rebounded so exceptionally. So I think for a minute we need to focus on the fact that while the economic data is terrible, whether it's corporate earnings that are slowing down, unemployment, as I mentioned, the housing market, it was a real bright spot in the beginning of the year. Now it's gotten quite soft. Although one bit of positive news, believe it or not, home prices are still up year over year because they're in short supply. And when they do come on the market, there's folks with enough capital, and they can get a low interest rate loan, and the banks are still willing to loan money. And for those who are gainfully employed, have an opportunity to get a home at a very low rate, they're taking advantage of that opportunity and making the most of it. So the housing market actually hasn't fallen apart, i.e. like remember 2008 did. That's not the case this time. When I mentioned the stock market about not being expensive, in fact, I hate to say this, but the current stock market, albeit, has gone a little too far too fast. When I mentioned about flying blind, the reality is, since we don't know what second quarter earnings are really going to be, many corporations aren't even forecasting what they expect to earn in the second quarter because they simply don't know. The stock market has actually gotten a little too expensive too fast here. It's come a little too far too fast. I hate to say that. We would expect lots of volatility until we get to the second unknown. So if economically we're good going in and now we're real bad, the stock market's accepted it. Stock market and the bond market are forecasting mechanisms. They look to the future. Well, the market has certainly reacted to an improvement around the virus, but the next step would be, beyond the virus, how do we begin to open up? And I think it's worthwhile talking about stages of the virus and how we normally react. The first stage is the new case growth. We're out of the first stage. The second stage is the peaking of fatalities, and that's where every country in the world, except for us, and we look like we're really close to peaking. I think we already have, other than yesterday. So we're in that second stage of fatality peaking. I believe we're actually through it. The third stage would be a dramatic reduction in the number of new cases and the number of fatalities. So we should be right about there, that as we begin this next week, we should see a real significant drawdown in the number of new cases and then those people who are passing away. And then that fourth stage is where we see a significant drawdown to where it's just a few percent these coming weeks. So we're on the cusp of that. So that sets us up for how do we begin to open up. And that idea of design opening up is really a five-step plan. Step one was the strict lockdown. We're through that. Step two is adjusted lockdown, which we're about to go in. What can we begin to open up to allow things to work? Step three will be a full opening up, and that's going to require some sort of medical assistance to get us there. Step four would be a global distribution of a vaccine, and then step five is full-on growth again. So in that context, where are we now? Well, we're in that second step of adjusting the lockdown phase. And in that context, we're watching two coalitions come together. The first one is in the New York, New Jersey area. Now, the New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Delaware have come together to come up with a strategic plan that is going to be the slowest to open up of anywhere in the country. Targeting May 15th, you're going to see this slow, methodical approach to opening up. And it's going to start with what areas of those states can they open up. For example, southern New Jersey is relatively unaffected by this, so there are large swaths of that can be open. Northern New Jersey, where I live, there's plenty of those. In New York, as you can imagine, New York City and the surrounding suburbs are affected, but in the greater New York State are not. So targeting opportunities to open up. Conversely, the Southern Coalition, which is a different group of states and haven't had the same sort of impact that the North has had, which is Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, and Mississippi, are already actively beginning to open up. On Friday, the governor of Georgia has declared that they're going to allow certain non-essential businesses to begin to open up, like gyms, hair salons, bowling alleys, and so on. South Carolina has already begun to open up, Tennessee May 1st, so you can see that they're a little bit ahead. Now, I'm a little bit concerned, by the way, that they don't have the same advanced testing the New York area does, but certainly that's a positive result. Why that matters is economically, even a mild turn to opening up will begin to generate revenue, begin to put people back to work. That's an exciting aspect of what's going on. And we're beginning to see that active component, active opening, or the idea of the adjusted opening is beginning to take place. Mindful to see how it goes, but certainly from the idea of beginning to reopen again, if you look at Spain, Italy, Germany are all on the same path, have all already begun to be opening with the mindset that they're going to target areas of breaking out and go and quarantine those areas to make sure it doesn't become too significant. Add to that, let's not forget that our federal government has been the most active government in the entire world to prepare us for what's going on, but more importantly, prepare us for what's to come. In other words, the federal government, as of this point, has put in nearly $8 trillion, not all of it's been spent yet, to get small businesses up and running, to get large businesses backstopped, to backstop municipalities, and to a degree, to backstop different sectors of the economy so that it not only functions now, but more importantly, on the other side of this creates a situation where we'll have enough cash to get the economy running as quickly as possible and keep things working. The internal mechanisms of the U.S. economy have to keep working to be able to buy and sell a home, buy and go get a loan, buy and sell a stock or a bond are all working because the federal government stepping in, with the latest being a $484 billion addition to the Small Business CARES Act that allows businesses to access to money to keep their employees employed and keep themselves from going bankrupt. It is the biggest single approach by any government in the history of the world to keep things going. Nothing of this size or magnitude has ever been done before. And certainly maybe in the long term we'll be concerned about the debt situation, but in the short term we believe it'll be very effective into mitigating or limiting the depth of the recession. Critical component to that. So now let's switch to the last piece of this, the second unknown, which is how do we get out of this darn situation and get people healthy and get things running again? Well, that comes back to a piece about New York City. When I look at New York City's data and spend some time really going through the inner workings of it, it turns out that of the 9,562 people who have passed away, unfortunately, and our thoughts and prayers are with them, 98% of them had an underlying condition. That's significant. When you think about how do we reopen the society, it's going to come down to a component of who are the people who are most affected? How do we protect them? What can we do to make sure that they're going to be least impacted? And what steps can we take to open the economy smartly with common sense so that in the end we don't end up a scenario where we're repeating this again at some point down the road? Critical aspect of this is knowing who gets it, who's most susceptible, and how do we protect them? So that data has been very powerful in beginning that process of opening up. Add to that, the medical industry has been very aggressive in trying to find ways to help us ramp up the testing. $25 billion of the money that's about to be passed is going to be dedicated just to testing. New York would like to have 40,000 tests a day to be able to reopen up the economy, as would New Jersey. And there are now real efforts being made to significantly ramp up the testing opportunity, with the latest two being Rutgers University can have a saliva test that will actually allow you to test yourself either at home or in a lab without having going through a lengthy process, and it's almost instantaneous to get the results back. But probably the most exciting one is one that just got approved by the FDA, where the Pixel test by LabCorp will allow you to buy a test, take your own saliva, put it in a packaging, sending it back to the laptop, and they'll tell you if you have an antibody. Critical. Well, Rutgers is going to tell you if you're sick. The Pixel situation, the LabCorp situation will tell you if you have antibodies. If you have the antibodies, let's say you were asymptomatic or you had it, it didn't really affect you, you can go back to work and get and rejoin society and not worry about it. Who knows? Maybe you'll have a card that you carry on telling, verifying that you're healthy, but certainly there'll be some ways that'll allow us to be able to do that. And then for testing of people who are sick, Abbott Labs has a test that in 5 minutes' time can almost tell you if you're sick or not. On the antivirus front, there's a number of efforts being made to repurpose existing medications, with the most exciting being Gilead scientists using a drug called Remdesivir. In a study in Chicago, 123 out of 125 patients recovered that were in critical condition. In a global study, 68% of patients recovered. So it's a new test, and it's not a lot of people, but it's repurposing an existing drug that was created for Ebola. And so far, the WHO is saying this is the most promising repurposing of a drug in the marketplace today. If it helps us take the pressure off of hospitals, then we could function as a society much easier by the sickest people getting treatment and not passing away. Suddenly, we've got a bridge to being open up the economy on the other side. That's a very different outlook than where we were just a few weeks ago. Distribution Bio, headed up by Dr. Glanville. They were the folks that came up with an antivirus for Ebola. They took a situation that had a 50% mortality rate in Ebola and reduced it to 6%. That means 94% of the people that took their antivirus survived. Well, they claim they have it. They've created a cure, and they've handed it off to the Bill Gates Foundation, the Military Medical Institute, as well as six other companies to ramp up testing to be able to get it in the public's hands as soon as possible. They believe they can have a dose ready for the global public by the end of the summer. It would start with the folks who are most susceptible and go from there. Now, it's not a vaccine, but it's an antivirus that would allow folks to recover if they get sick. Critical step in all this. And on the vaccine front, there's also a number of different companies, actually there's over 160 different studies going on with vaccines, antiviruses, repurposing of existing drugs to try and find a solution for us to get out of this sooner rather than later. But probably the other most exciting vaccine is Moderna. Moderna is a company that started back in March. They actually came up with a vaccine in February. And then back in March, their clinical study was launched and they inoculated 40 people. Well, it's gone very well, and they've gone through the second round of inoculation, and the federal government just rewarded them with $483 million to begin ramping up production, where they expect to have millions of doses available before the end of 2020. As they make it through phase two trials, and so far the success rate has been exceptional, there is a real opportunity to have a vaccine available to the public in short order. That means not 2021, but perhaps only in 2020. That's a very exciting moment in the medical frontier. And then finally, something that's very straightforward and been around for centuries, a plasma study. Right now there's 600 different people getting plasma injections from people who have been recovered to see if it will help them get out of that serious medical condition because they may be on a ventilator or something like that being intubated. And that's a real promising step because at the core of this, if we can take the pressure off the hospital system, then we can open up the overall U.S. economy at a measured, smart pace. So when you put this all together, there's reasons to be optimistic. While the collapse in oil is a terrible thing, it does mean that I paid $1.80 for gasoline. Gasoline is down 25%, which is the lowest drop-off in U.S. history. Certainly something to be concerned about. But on the other side of it, it's a bonus. Interest rates are some of the lowest you'll ever see in your lifetime. No doubt about it. It's incredible to see what's happened there. So on the other side of this is a chance to maybe refinance or get a mortgage that would be really inexpensive. It's sad to say that there's nearly 25 million people could hit the unemployment line. We may see in the heart of the Great Depression, 25% of the labor force hit the unemployment line. But they were on the unemployment line for years. And this time we may see it be as 20%. But remember, the bulk of them are from industries that can, once turned on, they can get right back to work in that leisure, tourism, restaurant industry. And the federal government has bought them time and bought us time to be able to recover. For example, the average worker makes about $1,000 a week. Between state aid, state benefits, and overall support by the federal government, they're going to get right back to their $1,000 a week, $600 from the federal government, anywhere from $400 to $600 from their local state. So actually, the federal government has bought that person 3 to 4 months of sustainability to be able to prepare them to re-enter the workforce, which could actually really ramp things up. Not necessarily a V-shaped economy, because we don't have a vaccine that allows us to turn things back on overnight, not a golden lever, but a slow, methodical approach will prepare us to be able to open up and have an opportunity to add people back to the workforce as we can control the spread. So I think the medical industry, coupled with the work of the federal government, coupled with some of the unintended consequences of this shutdown, can actually help us on the other side of this and prepare us for better things to come. So I think I'd look back and just remember that, first off, you know, the CDC has been very proactive in trying to help us find a not only a cure, but a process to get out of this thing, as I mentioned some of those stages already. And there's no doubt, I mean, it's a shame that we're kind of stuck in a bit of no man's land right now. It's too late to crush the disease in its tracks. It's already out there and running rampant. We don't really have the ability, the discipline to completely lock down and eradicate it, because we still got to feed people and support those who need the support. However, we're not so reckless that we're not being smart enough to bend the curve. So while, sure, we would have liked to have eradicated overnight, we are all together bending the curve globally and domestically, and we're seeing it in the data. So as long as we continue to focus on the data and know that some of it's going to be hard to swallow, like, for example, believe it or not, the oil market was looking like they were going to give oil away for free in the month of May, or even pay you to take oil away. That's how crazy things have got. So some of the data is hard to see and hard to even understand. But at a time when we have completely shut things down, know that we were healthy going into it. The federal government has helped out. The medical industry is supporting it. We as consumers were in good shape financially before this and should be preparing ourselves for the exit on the other side, which will overall help the situation and get us better. So in an update, I would say probably the most optimistic conversation I've had in some time, that we are making efforts in every front, medically, from the virus spread, economically, and financially, to prepare us for the future. With that, operator,